We finish off one of the lesser known films in the Asylum mega series this week, but in a world where audiences have already consumed Sharknadoes, how can this kaiju series keep up? The introduction, of course, of a gigantic Russian death machine will take this universe into a new and very odd direction, but will it end on a high note or leave off on a sour one to finish off this bitter meal? Find out along with us. This is Kaiju versus History, Mega Shark versus Colossus.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your Red Mercury Glazing host, Miles, and joining me is a giant shark who doesn't get any plot development over four films, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing?
Hello, hello. Pretty good. Pretty good.
That's my line.
Pretty nice.
Inside joke for another show. Although I will say,
I'm lying, Miles. I'm lying right to you. I'm under the weather.
It's true. You are lying. You weren't lying to me. You were lying to the audience because I already knew that you were under the weather.
But I wasn't
going to call you out on it because I'm a good bud.
Pretty good for being under the
weather. All things considered,
I suppose. Yeah, and we've pushed off this recording, it feels like, for a month because I watched this movie
several weeks ago, and this will kind of give some idea of where this falls in my evocative. I have forgotten most of it, blends together with all of the other Asylum movies at this point.
I mean spoiler for my rating of this later, but I think I've found the ultimate sleep aid in these kaiju films, because I want to say I have fallen asleep watching every single Mega Shark film at some point, or I've had a pause because I was falling asleep. And funny. you don't think an hour and a half would take that long to get through, but almost every single one of them I was like, boy howdy, I'll finish this last 45 minutes, this last half hour later,
because this show has completely helped dispel the notion that a shorter movie like is somehow better. Like, now, because there is this idea amongst a lot of film goers and film fans that, like, hey, we've lost sight of the 90-minute film, and we really have. And so when people see like a shorter runtime, they think, oh great, this is going to clip along, which if it's a competently written and directed movie, it will. That said, on the flip side, a 70-minute movie can feel like I watched all three extended Lord of the Rings back to back to back. And this show has absolutely proven that, not particularly with this movie or even this franchise, even though I find them generally terrible personally. I also have to say that the shark doesn't get any plot development, but it's a different shark in almost every single one of these movies just somehow been unfrozen.
You would think at least one of the sharks would be kind of cool with humanity, but no, they're all kind of jerks.
That seems like the basis of like a late 80s, early 90s cartoon, like a Denver the Last Dinosaur situation, where like if they rebooted Jabberjaw, he would be a mega shark.
Yeah, exactly. A friend to all humans.
But I do agree with you somewhat, though, because like, you would think, they've talked about these sharks getting unfrozen. Now, all these movies do have sort of a continuity in that the Megalodon attacks have happened, but they don't really have a continuity in like what is exactly happening as much.
Yeah, I mean, just mega sharks become kind of a way of life for humanity in these films as they go on. And this one starts the exact same way as the previous one, which is kind of almost the same newscasts, talking about, what will happen with the mega shark coming back and what have you.
Yes. But before we get deeper into this mega hole, Patrick, tell us what's in a title.
Oh, well, I mean, so much, Miles, of course.
Really? Because I don't see much listed here.
I didn't write it down, but
okay.
I am interested that this movie kind of breaks, I guess, the the titular theme of the series, which is mega shark as like two words versus a creature that feels like either is two words or is like a mix of two words. So like,
John Octopus or Crocosaurus or
Crocosaurus, Mecha Shark. It really feels like Colossus needs something like Great Colossus or, you know, Giant Colossus.
Titan Colossus, perhaps.
That's too far. That'll get them in trouble with copyright infringement.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're super concerned based off of what I've seen from this series. So yes, what is in the title?
So there's a couple other translations for the title, including the Romanian, which I enjoy, Terror from the Deep Colossus. Doesn't even have Mega Shark in the title. And what did I...
Wait, is it Terror from the Deep colon Colossus? Or it is. Okay. So I guess Terror from the Deep is maybe the franchise name there.
I haven't noticed it in some of our other title descriptions. In the Japanese title is Megashaku versus Goreto Titan, which is Great Titan. So it does kind of follow that same title theme of two names. I was thinking with like Red Mercury being the kind of MacGuffin of this film, that like Red Colossus or something like that would work in it. But yeah, that besides that, some of the other titles for this was just Mega Shark 4, Colossus, and I don't think it had any like filming names besides that, but not much else as far as that. This film, of course, was released on DVD in a lot of countries. I do think it is interesting that the Colossus is spelled with a K as opposed to the typical spelling. It's not really an explanation.
Well, there isn't, but I have two. One, it's always a lazy way to indicate something is Russian in American media.
Colossus.
Two, maybe someone's a big Mortal Kombat fan because that's their whole shtick. Everything spelled with a K.
Yes.
Those are my two explanations. I assume it's the first. That is something that pops up a lot in not just movies, but comics and games and books and stuff like that.
Yeah, but Mega Shark versus Titan or Colossus or Great Colossus in other countries, like I said, not at all. Doesn't have. Well, I did not even make the connection while I was programming for the podcast. This Colossus had anything to do with Attack on Titan. But
I didn't either, but I also forgot that for like a brief moment in time in the mid-teens, like that anime had a chokehold for like a brief period. Like it was always popular, but like when it first came out, like it was popular.
I mean, to be fair though, this does come out, Mega Shark versus Colossus came out in July of 2015, which is just a few months before the live action Attack on Titan films came out. So I think they could have been kind of horning in on that. And there's obviously a lot of design similarities between the Colossus in this film and the Colossal Titan in the, who's kind of like the poster Titan in the Attack on Titan series. It's the one that like kind of plot wise,
the Colossal Titan.
Yeah. Starts things and is definitely the, I would say the coolest looking of the Titans in that series for a long while. And like the biggest threat in that universe for a good long while. And yeah, I did not know much about this film, but I think the previous one versus Mecha Shark and Colossus is why I, you know, pushed to have these added to our Kaiju list. And to be fair, like I mean, these are the better of the Asylum Kaiju films. I mean, we're gonna watch a whole bunch more, there's so many of them, but at this point, like, these are much better than the King of the Lost World and what else. Yeah, we have them color coded in our scoring system here as brown, so they're very easy to see. Monster, of course, is one of our worst rated films at a 2 out of 10. And yeah, so these are at least, I would say, a good deal better than those. Obviously not a lot. Atlantic Rim is kind of its own thing. But yeah, I was actually surprised that this film kind of continued on and did some different things in its universe, as opposed to, you know, like the first two movies, just making the giant shark fight another giant creature. This is really some weird sci-fi stuff. It's like a Soviet era kind of magical giant destruction, like walking A-bomb in the Colossus. And it is something that I don't think has really been done in kaiju films before, is this kind of creature, even though it is very much based on the Attack on Titan franchise. So I was interested to see that, at least, Miles. what about you? This is kind of a little bit of a reboot of the series, in that we get all new characters and this other crazy sci-fi kind of
spin. I mean, you say that, but like at the same time, like it's a lot of the same. Now, I will admit that I do think they have one of their better like actors slash protagonists in this movie, but they give her absolutely nothing interesting to do other than just kind of being a boss. And that's Amy Ryder as Moira King. I thought she was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
She has presence.
Yeah. I don't think she's really taken off. She's been in
a lot of TV.
Another Asylum produced TV show, Z Nation, for a short time, I think, before that was canceled. But not much else since then. I think I did.
That show had five seasons, dude.
What?
That show had five seasons.
Yeah, so she was in the last season.
She's in the last season. And I mean, by most people consider Z Nation to, like, it's produced by the Asylum. I feel like they just kind of, you know, upfront some money in it because it's kind of based off of one of their, I think it's based off one of their, like a spinoff of one of their movies or something.
Really?
I think. Or there maybe there was another spinoff of that. I can't remember. But this, I think Z Nation tends to be like one of the more well-liked things put out by the Asylum.
Oh, most definitely. I watched, I want to say, the first season and enjoyed it. I think
we all watched it for The More You Nerd a few years ago.
Yeah. I don't think I was super dedicated in continuing it on, but yeah, that was.
No, but I had a good time with it.
Oh yeah, she was only in a single episode, so I don't think she's acted since then. But she was very good in this movie, and
I remember her from The Secret Life of an American Teenager.
Oh, since we were talking about the cast, the other main character and kind of our Jaleel White of this film is Dr. Allison Gray, played by Ileana Douglas, who is, she's been in a lot of stuff.
She has, like, as soon as you see her and you hear her voice, you're like, oh, I know exactly who that is. And to the degree where I was like, why is she here?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I feel like she plays like the main character's best friend in a lot of movies, you know, like what are you dating him for kind of character.
Like, this is a person who had like a near decade long relationship with Martin Scorsese. You know,
I was about to say she was in Goodfellas. She was in, what else was she in for Scorsese?
Cape Fear.
Right. So she's a couple of smaller roles, I think, in both of those movies. I actually don't really remember her in Goodfellas, but she plays Rosie in Goodfellas. I remember her very well from, she's like the sister-in-law in Stir of Echoes with Kevin Bacon, which I enjoy that movie a lot.
Oh yeah, that it's a very fun movie. Actually, they just put out like a new 4K of that.
One of my favorite ghost movies.
It's a good one. She's popped up in a ton of stuff. You've absolutely seen her. You've certainly heard her voice. She's done a lot of TV work over the years. And yeah, I like her. They give her really nothing to do.
Yeah.
She's basically supposed to be the kind of ignored woman who's right the entire movie. And it's frankly exasperating to watch.
Yes, that is correct. And what else we got? We got Brody Hutzler, another actor I can't really place, but he plays our kind of a billionaire bad guy in this movie.
I made a crack about him I called him Dine. Well, I called him, this means nothing to younger people, but I called him Co-Carrie Ellis.
He was in many episodes of Young and the Restless from 1999 to 2004.
Yeah, he was also in, he's in like five episodes of Angel, which I was a big fan of Angel, so I've recognized him.
main actor in Days of Our Lives for 4 years. And so it's probably very well known in kind of like that scene. He does a good job here. Like I said, I think most of the actors and actresses in this film.
The problem in above. This particular movie is not the cast. I would agree. I think they have some of their strongest talent. But again, just because you have, you know, people who can act, if you don't give them anything to act to, they still look largely silly.
Well, I would about to say the only person that feels super out of place is the role they typically reserve for the veteran actor. And that's like the admiral or the general of these asylum kind of kaiju films. Ernest Thomas plays Admiral Titus Jackson.
And he's film. A veteran actor.
I honestly, well, I didn't recognize him. One, he played, you know, he was in What's Happening.
Right.
For many, many years. That's probably his best known
role.
But I didn't even know he was an actor. I thought they just pulled someone off the streets because he's just not a very convincing admiral. You know, his line delivery is a little flat. But
it's honestly it's very very bad.
it's rough. Well, when
it's rough, but it's also written poorly. Like again, like everything in this movie, they even recycle a lot of the jokes from the franchise. Like you have the shark hitting a boat, so it hits a major like landmark on Earth. This time, the Jesus of Rio,
the Christ the Redeemer. Yeah,
yeah,
that's my favorite scene from the movie.
So here's the thing: is like I was like. That gag I thought was funnier than the pyramid gag in the last one. Like, so it still lands, but you're also like, all right, guys, yeah, that's your last one. You got to calm down.
Yeah. Well, just in some of these movies, you have bigger actors, like, you know, the first mega shark, I think it was the first one. No, or maybe versus Crocosaurus. I'm getting confused. Robert Picardo plays the admiral, and he's really hamming it up, at least. You know, having a good time there, and just didn't feel it in this movie quite so much. But yeah, I do want to talk about that scene. It doesn't make any sense that the producers are like, Mega Shark's got to destroy a national monument or a new wonder of the world, because the previous movie, the producers mandated in versus Mecha Shark that the pyramids of Giza get destroyed, or like
pyramids had to go,
or the Sphinx or something. It doesn't make any sense because they are like hundreds of miles inland, right? Let me just Google this real quick. I mean, they're like real far. They're on the Nile, right? But from the Strait of Gibraltar, we're talking. Like 100 kilometers, 120 kilometers or so. At the very least, Christ the Redeemer is like right there in Rio de Janeiro, and like the ocean is visible from it. But that is definitely my favorite part of this movie, is the submarine getting like tail whipped into it. But yeah, the same location is the setting for the climax, the final battle of Godzilla Kong, the new empire, which somehow Christ the Redeemer makes it out, I think, okay in that movie.
Yeah, well, that franchise doesn't rely on too many landmark gags, if we're being honest.
I would love for King Kong to pick up Christ and use him like a club.
I mean, yes, absolutely. But if you think about it, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, the Golden Gate Bridge gets it. And Fenway Park gets it, but
I mean, Boston gets absolutely
obliterated. Yeah, Boston gets devastated, but they're not doing a whole lot of sight gags. And
no,
I feel like if it's something that like the 1998 producers would do, you know, with the World Trade Center or the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, somehow they're really touchy feeling about destroying buildings in New York, I guess, these days.
But. Well, again, 98.
Yeah.
Before, you know, the big one.
Boy. Yeah. So I would say this movie works and doesn't work in the same way that the previous two ones work and don't work.
I think the biggest problem, and it's a huge problem with this franchise, is not just the Z-grade writing, but it's also they stretch out, like, obviously they want their human actors to do things as much as possible so they can spend less money on the effects. The problem is they're running around doing nothing in nowhere, and we can tell it's nothing in nowhere because of whatever office space they happen to rent that weekend.
Yeah, this film, I think, like, at least the last one, is filmed, like, almost entirely in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles area, and sets that they can probably procure fairly inexpensively. Mm-hmm. It has the problem that almost all the Asylum movies has, which is when they're trying to film in like a high-tech command center, it's just these bulkheads and, you know, consoles with like lights and buttons and stuff.
That, yeah, it honestly like feels like a 1960s Star Trek set. Okay, we were both thinking that. Okay, cool.
Well, the main offender for me is the Atlantic Rim cockpits. They're just so bad. It feels like they reuse those in every film. And then,
yeah, because the cockpit here isn't that great either. When you have the three, like the supermodel squad team, who you think, oh, these might be our main characters. Nope.
no, the Team Unicorn or what have you. They have some good production value in whatever retired, you know, U.S. Navy ship that they shoot on out in L.A. because, you know, that is an actual, you know, set that that has all the elements that they're looking for. And that's why almost all these movies take place, at least in some part, on board a U.S. Navy ship of some kind. But I mean, it makes sense. But then we get into like the billionaire ship in this film, and they're back to making weird kind of tech cockpits that don't look great. I will say, I think the CGI in Colossus is pretty rough,
it's really rough, and that's supposed to be one of the main draws.
Oh yeah, design wise I think it looks interesting. it's okay at best. Interesting is definitely not executed well. The shark, though, actually does look a lot better in this movie, and I think probably of the four films care most about its, you know, internal logic and scale and things that are pretty important to a kaiju film. They care the most about in this movie. Not that it's great in any way, shape, or form, but boy howdy, the other movies, it goes from like 500 feet long to like 100 feet long, and you know, at some points it can just like jump over a ship and it's like smaller than it, and others the fin is like twice as large as the ship itself. So yeah, that
there's a lot of scaling issues
in the series. I'd say this movie does it best as far as keeping the shark, you know, fairly consistent. There's a lot of scenes where, you know, of course it's shown in relative size to some of these boats, and I feel like this movie does it best. Not that it saves this film a lot, but
what's interesting about the Colossus design is it really looks like they just wanted to do an Attack on Titan version of King Kong, because he looks very Kong-like when you kind of stare at him for a little bit. Yeah. You look at the cranium and he's like, oh, that's kind of ape-like. And then the chest with the very broad shoulder, like even though it's armored, like it feels very ape-like.
Yeah, the arms, the forearms kind of being bigger than the upper arms feels ape-like, certainly. So there's definitely something to that. But yeah, the design is very much colossal titan based. And I don't know, the history of like how they made the Colossus in the movies is pretty vague. But
so, yeah, there is an old Tumblr post that collected some of the concept art for the Colossus, which I thought was pretty interesting, because I'll share this with you real quick so you can kind of peruse them. But initially it looked like it was going to be much more robot looking, with some of them being flat out like, oh, that's just a super cyborg. And one of them looked like Lord Zedd.
I mean, they've definitely got some cool concepts here. Why they ended up not using any of these heads. The heads all look better on these
concepts. I fully agree. The heads, even the one that looks kind of like, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember what the little clone race was called in Star Wars, but their heads have that kind of oblong shape, like the skull here. But
I like both the ones, especially that have a single eye. I guess it is more.
Yeah, I like that idea too. I think it's a lot more interesting. The one with the red star on its chest, I was like, yeah, that feels a little bit more on brand, you know?
Very on the nose, but.
Yeah, but like in a fun way. I think that's what's so disappointing about this concept for me. I will say this, despite my complaints about the script writing, I think the actual basic plot of this movie is pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly standard.
It's standard video game logic, but I do like the origin of the Colossus. I like it being this old Cold War doomsday machine. I thought that was at least a very interesting concept. I mean, we said poorly executed. The plot points to it make zero sense. But I do think the at least the idea, like I just... Especially this one, more so than the other ones, I feel like in more capable hands, this movie could have been really actually good.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about how Asylum doesn't try to make bad movies. They just somehow always end up making bad movies. But yeah, this one, at least, the kernel of it could have been interesting. Yeah, I don't know. The film ends with a post-credit sequence of yet another Megalodon being born and a title card
eating the annoying doctor.
Yeah, it ends with Mega Shark will return, but this is indeed the last of this film series, Miles, though.
But it comes back in the big Endgame movie, yes. Right?
Well, Mega Shark itself returns in Apocalypse 2025. Is that the name of this movie?
Yeah, I think
eventually going to watch.
That came out like 2 years ago or something.
But yeah, I mean, it's not the same shark as in any of these movies. And it's kind of like, I think the plot of that film is like aliens recreate the Asylum films.
Yeah, it's 2025
Armageddon. Like super, yeah, keep getting it wrong.
It's supposed to be like some super meta thing, which I would have cautioned them against. But, you know, it is what it is.
are you ready to rate this? This film,
yeah,
this
like I mean, I feel like shark. I feel like we haven't even like scratched the surface in this movie, but there's not much surface to scratch. Like, I mean, the characters are pretty cardboard. Like, you know, we talked about this doctor that gets eaten in the post-credit sequence. It doesn't matter. He's this misogynist who's been like antagonistic towards the correct doctor that was played by Liana Douglas, and you know, he kind of gets his just desserts because he is overtly chauvinistic towards her and just generally like it's almost like, you know, having Elon Musk as your right hand man. He comes up with nothing but bad ideas that everyone seems to think are great.
Surprising he doesn't die earlier.
I'm genuinely shocked that he didn't die earlier, considering how liberal they are with character deaths in this movie. But Amy Ryder makes it out. That's all that matters. Maybe we'll see her again. Who knows? I don't think so. But yeah, there's not much this movie. I think the fight between, if we talk about favorite scenes, I know you mentioned that the Christ the Redeemer gag was probably your favorite, and it's a pretty good one. It's not a favorite scene, but I do love when every single time Amy, what's her character's name, Moira King, has to do something, it's like something she's not been trained for, like flying this giant aircraft carrier or whatever she's flying. And it's like, you know, are we supposed to do this? And she goes like, nope. And then just does it. There's no repercussions whatsoever. I also love that they got some male model and gave him glasses. And he went, it's like, you're the nerdy guy. You're a Spencer.
Yes.
And I was like, there is no one less prepared for his role than Edward de Reuter. And I got to give it up for him because he Forrest Gumps his way through this movie like a champ. there isn't a whole lot to say about that, about these Mega Shark movies at this point. Like either you can kind of go along with it or you're just kind of wasting your afternoon. So let's see how you felt, Patrick. What's your personal opinion about this one? What's your personal score?
I dare anyone to try and watch all four of these movies back to back. I think that'd be just an impossible task to survive.
The amount of edibles that I would need to sustain my sanity to do like a back to back to back to back, it might kill me. It might kill Snoop Dogg. That's how much would be required for me to do that.
Yeah, I still can't really rate this much higher than the previous two. But I'm going to drop my score a little bit here because I think this one, even though I liked a lot of the actors in this, didn't like them as much as some of the previous films. All these movies, as I said, I don't think I made it through on a single watch, which none of them are really over an hour and a half. I think maybe the last one was the longest, but
felt like it.
I definitely fell asleep watching this movie the first time. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment. Like I said, this is not the worst of the series, but it is definitely not the best. So it's kind of right there in the middle, maybe along with the previous one. What about you, Miles?
I am in complete agreement with you. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the more tolerable entries. You do have a capable cast. You have, you know, a lead who I do not mind looking at all. But I mean, I struggle to even call this baseline good because it's not. It's a really, really poor script. And even though these actors are better than most from the Asylum oeuvre of films, they're not great either. Now, they're not given any material to allow them to stretch their muscles. And some of these people I've seen in other things and seen them, you know, do well in them. You know, I mean, one of them has, you know, been in one of our great cinematic auteurs filmography. So like, there is that. But yeah, the special effects do no favors. The Colossus and the Shark really have very little action with one another, less so than most of the Godzilla movies that take forever to get the two creatures in contact. It's and frankly, it's not a lot of fun to watch. Like I said this to you before we started recording, I was like, this is somehow the most watchable of the franchise, but it's still not a great time. And that's such a wild thing to think of. But I can't dock it too much because there is some competence in somewhere in the making of this film. But it's not something that I'm going to stand by. It's certainly not something I'm going to suggest people go out and see.
No, I would, like I said, I would suggest the second film, which is worse, but somehow more fun.
You know, I mean, that does venture in the so bad it's good territory. This is so like in the Venn diagram, like leaning towards mediocrity. Like it's so close to being like an adequate movie that like it just kind of super falls flat, and that's why I don't want to harp on it too much because it was watchable, but it's certainly not good. And so I think 4 is the right spot for it.
For its technical score, I do think this movie, like I said, is one of the more watchable ones, despite me not enjoying it as much as some of the worst ones. It looks probably the best CGI wise, and I think that's just a factor of the more Asylum movies do. They do put more effort into things like the CGI as these films go on. And this film, I think maybe especially maybe the last one too, but the Colossus, while it feels like it shares some assets with the Atlantic Rim giant robots, maybe some of the same armature, digital armature. It is a new design for them. So they are kind of pushing the boundaries of what they're able to do in those films. I do like the actors and I like elements of the script a good deal. So I'm giving this a 6 out of 10 for its technical achievement, which is good or very good on our scale. And I think it is probably the best of this. I mean, the best of the Asylum films that we've seen so far, but that is not a very high bar. What about you, Miles?
I did bump it up from my initial score a little bit, but not as much as you did. I'm giving it a 5. I do think the cast is, you know, really strong considering an Asylum movie. Obviously, Amy Ryder was my VIP of this one. I also think the story is one of the first ones that they've come up with that at least has some cool ideas that I would have liked to have seen maybe fleshed out by a better writer. But this script is absolute garbage. The Colossus, it's not a great design, and it's made worse by the janky attempts to animate it. I am not someone who is fully turned off by bad CGI, But when it's barely being used and done so in such a lazy fashion, you can't help but mark against it. I do agree with you. The shark is probably one of the better ones we've seen, but that doesn't really help the movie. The production is the standard. Like nothing about this is elevated except for they happen to have a better crop of actors this time around.
For its importance as a kaiju film, like I said, I think this is probably the most interesting this series gets as far as concepts go. And we haven't really had many films that have had kind of humanoid creatures like the Colossus fighting giant beasties like the Megalodon, the mega shark of this film. It probably makes more sense for it to fight octopi and crocodile kaiju, or you know, robotic versions of itself. But this is, like I said, it's pushing some barriers. Doesn't make a ton of sense that they decided to ape the Attack on Titan series with this monster, but it, despite being shoehorned in, perhaps provided us with a little taste of something that we don't really get in other kaiju films. So for that reason, I'm giving it a stunning 4 out of 10 for how good it is, how important it is, which is a little disappointing, but still interesting. 5 is mixed feelings on this scale, but
yeah, I want to be right there with you, but I'm this is the most, one of the most watchable of the Mega Shark movies for me in a lot of ways. I feel like because of the fourth movie and because it still has almost every single problem that continues to plague this franchise until, like, you know, at this point, I feel like the Asylum has established their identity now, and now they are leaning into it. They may not, like, I know I you know, quoted that article about a scriptwriter who had tried to write for them before. Mm-hmm. I think that was even before, like, the cultural zeitgeist. I mean, now we're what, like 3 or 4 Sharknados in at this point in time? Out of like 7?
I don't think so. But they had definitely done at least 2.
let's see.
2015. Because
so 2015 was a third one. So we're 3 in. I feel like by this time, there's got to be a sense that of what an Asylum thing is, even to Asylum. And I feel like they probably just lead into that. I could be totally wrong about it, but I think that, like, you know, these movies have certainly piqued an interest at some point in time. If you're going to watch one, I would say watch this one. But I really don't think they're really part of the kaiju conversation for the most part. And, you know, I'm probably not going to try to watch these again on purpose. So for that reason, my score is 3.
3 out of 10. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's going to put my final score at a 4.6. So round up to a 5. You're at a solid 4, which means our podcast final is, of course, a 4 out of 10, which on our scale is disappointing and fairly mediocre. And it kind of lines up with what we've felt about the entire series. Atlantic Rim, I mean, not that this is not in the same series, but Atlantic Rim got a 4 out of 10. Mecha Shark versus Mecha Shark got a 4 out of 10. Crocosaurus got a 4 out of 10. If you're seeing a pattern. Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus only got a 3 out of 10. But boy howdy, now I kind of want to go back and watch that one as bad as it was. If you're keeping track at home, Asylum has not cracked the lofty goal of getting a 5 out of 10 on this podcast. Which is funny because the near Asylum film Behemoth did. It got a 5 out of 10, which is probably still a bit low. Yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. No more Mega Sharks, at least in the main series, Miles. We do still have a number of Asylum films because...
Oh, boy.
They keep making kaiju films and they keep knocking them off. But yeah, you can reach out to us online wherever you find podcasts, leave us reviews, or email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. We're on social medias at Kaiju Versus History and on Discord on the Cosmic Crit Discord, our other podcast. Check out our Letterboxd where you can find us, Kaiju Versus History. You can see our scores in 5-star format there and see what movies we're going to be watching. What makes the Kaiju film list? Miles, what are we doing next week?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And now that we've kind of seen the ripoff, we're going to catch you next time where we begin to look at the 2 film adaptations of a beloved manga and anime series that shook up the kaiju scene in Japan and in general. So tune in next week for History Versus Attack on Titan Part 1.